Hi, this is Tom Payne, otherwise known as Jesus from The Walking Dead, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through.
Hey guys, it's Jenna Elfman from Fear the Walking Dead. I play Laura. No, I play Naomi. No, I play June. I play June on Fear the Walking Dead. And you're listening to the Fear the Walking Dead talk through on Golden Spiral Media.
That was awesome.
Fear the Walking Dead talk through, episode 53. The Hurt That Will Happen review.
Welcome to Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to Fear the Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of Fear the Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278. Or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts.
Hey, survivors, and welcome to another fine episode of Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And I'm Mark.
And tonight, we will eventually get to discuss season 5, episode 2, The Hurt That Will Happen. But first, we've got additional feedback for last week, season 5, episode 1, Here to Help. So let's get to that, shall we?
We can talk about it.
Done talking. Time to listen.
Dieta in Louisville says, I rate this episode 8 out of 10 hanging deadhead ornaments. It was an alright episode. Alicia has definitely come a long way. She went straight into beast mode on the dead. I loved it. Awesome sauce was Alicia and Morgan's killing spree, stopping the dead from reaching the plane. Her weak sauce was Al going back for the story. Why now? You got cold cocked and kidnapped.
Indeed.
She basically states, overall, it was a decent episode. I see we have plenty of new people. Daniel is back. Yes, it looks like it's going to be a good season. I'm looking forward to it.
Did you say new people?
New people. I like new people.
We all like new people. All right. Oh, she continues on. She says, I listened to the podcast. I missed The Talking Dead when they announced they weren't coming back until season finale. It came on later than I could stay up. So I work in the morning. But I wonder why they did that. You had another post asking us about the cancellations on AMC, and I said it then. I don't understand why AMC is intent on force-feeding people shows during the time slots of The Walking Dead universe. They had a good thing with The Walking Dead, then The Talking Dead, and then they introduced Fear the Walking Dead, and then The Talking Dead. It was all working so good, but no, someone decided that they would just start injecting all these shows in between in hopes of getting people to watch. Hello, AMC. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Do they even realize they are sabotaging the shows? Do they not understand that The Walking Dead universe is a Sunday night show at 9 p.m.? And yes, you would more likely watch The Talking Dead right after because it's only like 10. That's not too late. But when change a show's time to 11 p.m. or 12 a.m. like they did the comic book men, you lose viewers and the momentum of the show. People have lives and they have jobs to go to on Monday morning, so no one is staying up late if they can't help it. Like I said before, they need to give new shows their own days. Stop trying to make every show a Sunday show. Hey, AMC, there are 6 other days in the week. No show will last on AMC, but maybe The Walking Dead universe, because they don't trust them to stand on their own day.
Yeah, it's funny. And they've had other shows run on Monday nights. Like, I know Better Call Saul has run on Monday nights, pretty much the whole run that it's been on. And I don't really understand why they have to keep running shows. Like in this case, Nosferatu is running the whole, you know, season or half season right up against Fear. So I don't really get it either. Now, one thing I need to check, I will check it, or I will give it when it's time to give the ratings. I don't have it, but I will have it an hour or so from now, more like two. The Nosferatu ratings for this week. I'm just curious to see how it did in the second week. So anyway, continuing, she had one more bit to say. And oh yeah, one thing to correct. It is coming back for the mid-season finale, not the season finale. So there is a split up of this season. We don't know how long it's going to be. It's probably going to be maybe a month or so, but there is a mid-season. So anyway, it will be back for episode 8, but not before. Anyway, she continues with one final point here. She says, Into the Badlands, I think, was based off a comic. Nosferatu is based off a book. The Terror was based off a book. The Killing, Humans, based off Swedish television series. Preacher was based off a comic. AMC just doesn't give shows a chance if it's not Breaking Bad or TWD oriented. I liked and watched all of these shows. Just to correct you on one thing, Dieta, Into the Badlands, I looked it up. It was an original story. It was not based on a comic, although you'd swear it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we have another bit of feedback. This is a long one. We've decided to split it up, and it is from Aaron, and we don't know where she's from, but she's Aaron from the internet. So thank you, Aaron, first of all, for submitting this on a comment from our episode this week. But thank you. We're going to power through it. So, Mark, why don't you start?
Well, Aaron, she says, I have to say this episode did not suck as much as I was expecting it to. I have low hopes for the season, which may have made me enjoy this more. I'm still super bitter about how they treated Kim last year, and I will forever call everything post 4A for sure the takeover era, but I have to give credit where it is due compared to 4B. Again, this episode was really good. It felt like season 2 of Fear quality, except there's still too much Morgan for my liking and not enough screen time for the original cast. But Alicia got more attention than she got most of last season. So again, points. Hopefully the rest of the season will be like this and we'll never have another 4B quality episode again. Anyways, on to what you all have to say.
And she continues on and says, We are fairly critical of many of the decisions made by the showrunners last season, particularly Madison's death. And we have all sorts of problems with the second half storyline, to the point where I wasn't sure I'd want to come back. Same. The promotions of Alicia in the season 5 trailer had me peaked, so I'm giving it a chance to see if she and Strand, and by extension Luciana, are treated better, but I'm still not okay with Madison not being there. I get AMC didn't want to give them another spinoff, so they took Fear and gave it to Lenny James, but Morgan just doesn't work here compared to where we've been. Again, this is the takeover era, so I'm not holding high expectations, and if anything happens to Al or Alicia, I'm probably out, honestly, but that's me. I figure in reality, they'll ride Alicia until the merger of the show, at least, and maybe even into the ear of the franchise, because she has a lot of the fans for this series, if not all of them, on some level. So, if nothing else, they need her for ratings, but I didn't think they'd off Madison either, so we'll see what happens. With all the new season characters popping up, I'm definitely sweating for certain people to make it out.
And she was quoting me at the beginning there. And I think this is you, Kyle. Correct me if I'm wrong, but She says, that said, it seems really risky to fly a plane in the apocalypse. Was that you? Somebody said it, I know.
I might have said it, but I thought Mark kind of mentioned a little bit too.
Maybe we all did. I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe
I think we
all kind of mentioned it.
Okay. She continues. She says, doing anything at this point is risky. With a smiley face. Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm definitely sweating Luciana's survival this season, along with some others. I actually didn't mind her in season two. It's when they made her basically just Nick's girlfriend. I took issue with her handling. I feel she might go out protecting one of the newbie kids, because protect the kids is usually how it goes, even though most are usually useless long run and get written off between seasons because they aren't as interesting characters as the adults. Plus, they get limited hours compared to adult actors, so it's hard to do long term. If you count Luciana as an OG, even though she came in season two, then if she goes, we'll only have Strand and Alicia. So they need to keep her for that alone, but we'll see. And of course, Daniel now. So three people. But yeah, we're going to get more into Luciana as we start talking about this episode, because there's a lot to talk about with her.
Oh, yeah.
I sympathize with what you're saying. I have a very similar take on this, but we'll get to it later. Mark, continue.
Yeah, she continues on saying, for the takeover era, because again, the showrunners in the moment totally stole the show from Kim and gave it to Lenny, sadly. Nothing against him personally, as I don't know how involved or not in that move he was, but it doesn't endear me to Morgan by extension. I'll agree this was a solid return. I give it an easy 7. Matt was always known for Eureka. Alicia coming out of the fog in that jacket so made me think of Madison. Hashtag always remember Madison. Which is the truth. Althea plus Alicia equal super love. And she continues on saying, not a fan of the beard talk coming back. I enjoyed that, though.
I'll continue, but always remember Madison definitely came into play this episode.
Yeah.
All right. She continues. There's too much Morgan in the Morgan Alicia scenes for me, but I feel there's too much Morgan period for this show. I do like Alicia is getting more screen time though. She should have been the lead post Madison, but again, takeover. Frowny face. The thing I wish they would stop though with their scenes is Morgan always telling Alicia things. Morgan is not the only one in the show who can give a speech to someone, so I would really like to see the other characters talking to each other instead of just Morgan saying his piece and them being all, you're right, in response. The same could be said for June and John. I get they're the pairing for this season, but they can interact with others to show you don't have to limit them to each other.
Yeah, and I think it's set up that way for Strand and Daniel to talk to each other also. And then, of course, you know, Luciana, who knows who she's going to talk to? I don't know. Who would she pair up to? The truck drivers or
the chomping tree
or
heads?
Charlie? The chopping tree heads, yeah.
Well, the voices in her head.
The accordions. The accordions, not worth a rim shot there. Anyway, actually injuring June would make for a great dramatic episode, because as a nurse, she is an amazing resource for the group to have. So if you took her out for an episode or two, that would definitely put them in a world of hurt. You'd think someone would ask to be trained by her as a backup that would give a character a new plot. Plus, let her interact with more than just John, because again, if they lose her, people are going to die fast. I'm for that episode. You could do John worrying over her for their moments, but on the whole, it shows how the smart character is also a critical character, not just the ones who can shoot or hit things hard. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned that actually last week about it would be interesting to have June be the one that's injured, not Luciana. Yeah. So I completely agree with you.
She continues on saying, again, I personally like Luciana in season 2 when she became just Nick's girlfriend. Basically, that's when I lost interest in her. I hope with him gone, we'll get season 2 good Luciana back. But as you've been saying this whole podcast, she'll probably go out this season. So it'll be short, even if we do, sadly, which is an injustice to deny. Again, the last 3 originals, depending on how you count Luciana, just got beat up. And for B, when it came to the character handling, maybe that's why Nick isn't there. Frank got out before things could get bad for his character. Question. Which, yeah, plus I don't think that Frank didn't like what was going on with the script and how they were going with the character.
Seems like a prophet at this point.
Yeah. She says, also, we better see Althea again, which I agree with. She's one of the only reasons I'm still watching this series. And actually, she's one of the few characters that I really enjoy that are new.
Yeah.
Myself.
She was one of the first characters when season 4 started that I was like, I'm really into this. You know, I'm like, I want to know more. Cared about her. You know, it's... she continues on saying, Daniel is such a ratings grab move because there's no reason to really bring him back as his big one-on-one buddy Madison isn't there, and given what happened to Ophelia, he has no reason to help them or care about them. So it's like, what's the point? It's the same with the Troy rumors. He only works with Madison, so what's the point? Sure, Daniel and Strand have some face-off stuff, but not really enough to justify Daniel being in the season, I'd argue. So I'm calling it like I see it. Daniel is there for ratings only in an attempt to bring some pre-Morgan fans back. I kind of agree a little bit to that, too. I hope they have a good story for Daniel, and I guess we'll see. But
I tend to agree with that as well.
Mm-hmm. And not looking forward to Dwight coming in either. I miss Fear being about the Clarkson Company. If they're going to keep pulling the Walking Dead people on Fear, just merge the show already. And I kind of agree with that too, just in the fact of like Fear was supposed to be like its own self-contained thing, but now it's turned into something else, and it does feel like they keep mixing in both. So, you know, the show has changed. So pure and simple, it's not what it was when it first started.
Kirkman and Scott M. Gimple are like the Steve Jobs of the,
and Wozniak.
Yeah. Well, not so much, but I always think of, you know, Steve Jobs vehemently denying, oh, we're not developing an iPhone. We're not developing an iPhone. Well, okay. He'd say we're not developing a phone because, it's just funny. But I tend to agree. I think they're bringing back Daniel because they like having him on the show. I think they realize what kind of actor he is and what a coup it is to have him. So if anybody's a busy guy, so they kind of let him, you know, he kind of defines what his schedule is. So if he's got something else going on for a season, they just let him be, and then they bring him back. I think that's kind of what it's going to be with him. If he ends up, you know, staying the whole season, he may not be back for season 6.
Right.
But that's what I think they're doing with Reuben Blades.
I think just quickly, it's just like, I think having his character come back in the sense of a story is that he's just going to be a thorn in their side because they have some kind of relationship, you know, with him from the past, that now that everything's kind of broken up and it's just Alicia, Strand, and really that's basically it out of the original group, he's just going to be like this little hanging Chad that's just going to, I think, cause problems. And not, I mean, I don't know, maybe he does come in to be like, he comes in and joins and helps and save at the right moment, or he could just be like, he's going to be basically a dead end and they're going to waste so much energy and time, which might cost them something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's possible.
I don't know. We'll see, I guess.
All right, continuing on. I really hope Al doesn't die over those tapes / stories. I agree. They should bring back Madison, as she never should have been killed off to start with, but will the showrunners allow it? Again, it's not like Kim wanted out like Frank did. They just took the show from her and in doing so screwed themselves. I fully understand if Kim makes them pay up to get her back as they did her dirty. So can she come back? Yes. Will she? I'm not holding my breath. I think Kim would come back for the fans and Coleman and Alicia at least, but can they afford her show wise? Because again, I fully get her making them pay up after how they treated her in season 4. I'm always going to want Madison back, so come on, girl. I think it'll be more behind the scenes, keeping her off, than story / fans wanting it, for sure. If the ratings crash hard enough, they might beg Kim back, but right now, I think showheads' egos will keep her out for a good bit, as well as a story that I have in the news. But I think that we've talked about this off and on the podcast, but there is people love Kim Dickens, they love Madison, and there is a vocal minority that hates her. And they did even, you know, throughout season 4, even right at the end. So you had people that were just, you know, mourning her, the loss of her, and like totally just couldn't believe it. And some of them are like, you know, don't let the door hit you on the way out. And we know people like that. I'll bring up, you know, Ruthie, who doesn't watch the show anymore. But when I told her that, you know, Kim Dickens was killed off, she's like, okay, that's good. You know, that was her reaction. But, you know, we know people that had similar reactions. It wasn't just her. So yeah. That's the thing I will say, Aaron, is that you loved her. I think the three of us loved her.
Yeah.
But not everybody did. And it still, even, you know, almost a year later, it still smells to me like there was actually, I said almost a year later. I guess it was a year later, come to think of it, because the season started earlier last year. It smells to me like this was a focus group decision. They did a focus group. They did a survey, got, you know, discovered, oh, there's a big negative against Kim Dickens' character. Oh, we should kill her off. That would be a good way to save money. And, you know, the rest is history. That's what it smells like to me. It also smells like a lot of the other AMC bonehead decisions we've been seeing. So that's my take. Unless you guys have anything else to say, we should let Mark continue.
She also says, I disagree, as I'm all fine with Travis and Chris being gone, as they were not my favorites by a long shot. Even Nick was meh to me, but had Madison gone out before she even did, I probably would have stopped watching the series. Madison is just the best character they have, with her ability to be their hero and villain at the same time. Daniel may have come close, but Ruben was never around the way they had Kim, so she for me was the heart of the series, and it is not the same without her. And I completely agree with you there. Again, for me, Alicia, Coleman, Maggie, and Denai are doing what they can to keep me around, but it's still not as weighty, in my opinion, as it was with Madison. She just brought the drama and organic feel. Is it interesting to see Alicia and Strand without Madison around them? Yes, at times. But there is no need to rush that plot, and I do completely agree with that.
All right. She continues, Troy coming back is just asking for so many problems, so they're doing good saying no to that. There's no reason to bring Troy back as awesome a villain as he was, because both Madison and Nick are gone, and they were his interactions in season 3, and the dude was bashed in the skull and covered in water. If you bring him back, no one can even honestly die on your show again, because you've basically spit on death. Also, you talk about a giant middle finger to any Madison fan still watching this would be it to have him back, but not her. And if they want ratings, bring back Madison.
And to that, they are not bringing back Troy. We mentioned that last week. It's a rumor, and it was refuted by one of the showrunners. So it's not happening. And I'm glad for that, because it would be weird, and I agree with you, Aaron, to bring back Troy and not bring back Madison. There would be no point. No point at all, because who did Troy interact with the most? Nick and Madison, and they're both dead.
And begone, yeah.
So, I don't know who started a rumor or why it started, but it's just a rumor. She continues, I'm all for Logan being not a clear bad guy or even not a bad guy. He's just an antagonist to them because they antagonized him first, because that makes him really interesting. The plot of the season might get all over the place. Agreed. Teens coming of age in the apocalypse. Isn't that basically Alicia's teen in season one? Nick's teen in season one? Charlie's early teens now? These kids this season, and basically any kid in this franchise's story. Also, if they're now going to do a spinoff, why couldn't Morgan go there instead of screwing up our show? I miss Dave Erickson, because we would have gotten the damn payoff from season 3 and still had Madison, I feel. Before I finish the last sentence I was going to say, I agree with this wholeheartedly. I think it would be a much different show if Dave Erickson was still running it.
Oh, totally.
Totally. Totally different. Yeah. And then I think this is addressed to me. She says, if it's not fun anymore, then yes, walk away. And not there yet, but if I get there, I'll know when it happens. So anyway, we got one more handoff, so Mark, you can anchor it.
She continues on saying, crossover, you mean takeover. Live ratings definitely aren't what they were. Yes, they are still the key because of ad money, but you can have ad on apps also, so it's not the end of end all be all anymore. And as the one host said, there are DVRs now to account for popularity. So rating a show is definitely harder, I think, compared to back in the day. And yeah, it is. There's so much out there for us to rate with.
There's on demand. There's websites. There's purchased shows. You know, through iTunes or whatever. There's many different ways of consuming the content for these shows.
Yeah. She continues on saying, from my experience, binging does affect how people see stories and characters. And I do agree, especially with the Marvel Netflix stuff, because at that point, when I was doing podcasting about that stuff, certain shows you could actually just go through as if it's a whole movie, and there are certain ones where it should be done weekly. She has a big one here. Boo Gimple. And yeah, I kind of agree. Yeah. I'm not a big, huge Gimple fan myself. And I don't know where this comes from, but there's only one Hellboy, and it stars Ron Perlman, Selma Blair, and Doug Jones. I could agree with you there, definitely. I saw the recent Hellboy, and I wasn't not a fan. And if you want to go to my podcast and listen to the review that Steve and I did, yeah, we weren't fans.
And this is the second time Doug Jones has been mentioned in a podcast today. that didn't mention Star Trek Discovery. Anyway.
And she says, boo, Endgame. It knows what it did.
Since I haven't seen it, I have no idea what she's
Let's
talking
leave it
about
at that. But, let's leave it at that, because I haven't seen it either.
Yeah, and I will just finish it off by saying thank you so much. And even though normally we only give showcase awards for voicemails, I'm going to give this one a showcase award because it was an essay.
Awesome.
So thank you so much, Aaron. Hopefully we'll be hearing back from you again soon. All right. And now for this episode, season 5, episode 2, which is titled The Hurt That Will Happen. Written by Alex Delisle, directed by Jessica Lowry. I didn't get a chance to look up either person. I know Alex Delisle. This is her second season with the show. And I think she's either a story editor or an executive story editor. Jessica Lowry, sorry. Maybe I'll look her up as we're talking about the episode, but I don't know anything about her. The description, which I pulled off of AMC.com, and I'm going to read these because we're not getting them the episode prior, so I'll read them as we go the rest of the season. Morgan and Alicia meet a survivor and learn of a grave new walker threat. Meanwhile, the mission is put to the test when one of their own goes missing. Elsewhere, Strand makes contact.
What?
All right. Mark, how would you rate The Hurt That Will Happen?
I gave it 7.5 out of 10 skid marks.
And I actually improved on my rating because I enjoyed this episode. It's 8.2 Cat's Meows.
And I gave the last episode 8.5. I'm going to lower that to the same that I'm giving this one. So I brought it down a point after sitting with it for another week. Both of them get 7.5. Character backstories hand waved. All right. Let's go to our listener ratings. Mark?
Steve from Oklahoma City says, he gives it 9 out of 10 cats licking their own butts.
I almost used that one. And then Dieta from Louisville says 8 out of 10 radioactive infected bird pooped walkers. Missed the last part.
And Diana, I think she's from Illinois, but she's better known as from one of the hosts of the Aim for the Head podcast. Hi, Diana. She gives it 7.5 out of 10 bird poop walkers. Very similar to Dieta's rating.
Yep.
LT from North Carolina gives it 7.5 vaguely irradiated Aikido staves.
Laura from Denver gave it a 5.5 toxic Avengers.
And lastly, Glynis from Toronto gives it 7 out of 10 nuked walkers. I see some similarities here. All right, so let's move on to the awesome sauce.
Awesome sauce!
So Diana from Aim for the Head podcast says, Grace, interesting new character who was pretty feisty and held her own with someone as intense as Alicia.
And Steve from Oklahoma City says, loved Alicia fighting the walkers coming out of the mud pit and not knowing which one was the infected walker. Her talk with Morgan later was great to see that introspection. And I kind of, that was kind of one of my awesome sauce because that whole like two headed, like, you know, like takeout was kind of awesome because I just love to see Alicia and her like weapon skills, because she's come a long way since like season 2 when she skilled up with her butterfly knife.
And yeah,
So, yeah, it was definitely one of my favorites. I love seeing her do that stuff.
I was going to mention, as an awesome sauce of mine, the Morgan mentoring of Alicia. I do like that. Some that don't, I'll take that under advisement, but I kind of like their dynamic. Mm-hmm. He sees the signs in her of what he went through, albeit maybe a less extreme version because he was alone and, you know, she's not alone, but if maybe the rest of them perish, maybe she'll just be like his clear time. So he's trying to kind of nip that in the bud because she's being a little single-minded. Like I took a note of when he said that, well, there was that dialogue where she said something like, you know, we agreed that I would, you know, take care of the walkers and, you know, you would do all the rest. And Morgan's like, no, that's what you agreed to.
I didn't, that whole scene though, I just kept, for some reason, it kept popping in my head was Galaxy Quest. It was like, never give up, never surrender.
Funny. They're not miners, they're miners.
Dieta from Louisville says, I guess aside from Alicia's radioactive walker kill, not much exciting happened in this episode. So I guess that kill is her awesome sauce, but with a touch of, but everything else is boring. So,
Glynis from Toronto says, Strand and Daniels meet up and Skidmark is the cat.
Yes.
Skidmark likes you.
And I'm guessing, Glynis, you did not listen to the podcast before you watched the episode, because we had mentioned that, or maybe you fast-forwarded, but we mentioned it last week. All right, Mark, what do you have for awesome sauce?
Daniel Salazar. Now, that is awesome sauce in itself, in my opinion. I love the character. Though he seems to be a bit of a cockroach that can't be killed, I was happy to see him, even for only this episode, it seems, because it doesn't really show that he'll continue on. He just kind of dismissed Strand at that point.
Well, I think he'll be back more than just this one episode, because they're just a little sneak peek. Episode 4 is called Skidmark. So, seems to me he's going to be back.
Probably in a video.
I'll be back.
I thought seeing Daniel back was like awesome too, but man, he was a dick to Strand.
He always is.
I know, but it was like, he was really like, I don't like you.
Yeah, admittedly he was, but there's a comment in Lara's voicemail that is very appropriate to that sentiment.
Setting, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, Mark, continue.
We find that Grace is the lady in the toxic suit. No toxic Avenger-style zombies, pretty much. You don't see any superhuman zombies out there. But at least we got one that looked a little toxic in the scene, and that's the whole point of the scene itself, saying that they're infected with this toxic strain, and you have to get naked and wash down, just like Morgan did, and take off your wedding ring, which he was apprehensive about at one point, if you looked at it. And I like new people.
New people. I like new people.
I like Grace a lot.
Yeah, I do too. Good new character, new person.
You don't have anything written down. Do you have any awesome sauce?
No, it was pretty much what everybody else said. It was Alicia and her cool kill. And
yeah. Well, I'm going to give one to Karen David. Karen David. Where have I heard that from? Oh, yeah.
Carol, did you kill Karen and David?
Ever since she was announced as going to be a regular on this season, I thought of that clip.
That clip.
That's, by the way, if you go and look that up, that's from season 4, episode 3, which is infection, I think. I think that's what it's called. I have to isolation, I think. Oh, now I have to look. isolation. I was right on my second guess. So about Karen David, I didn't really get to look up much about her. I'll probably look her up for next week. But she is a fellow Canadian, so that's one thing I'll say. But let's move on to weak sauce, shall we?
You're worthless and weak!
Dieta from Louisville says, Luciana going outside in the middle of the night by herself to see what that noise was? Why? Oh yeah, I'm high on painkillers too. How dumb was that? All she had to do was stay locked inside the shop, safe from the elements of the night. I do agree.
Yeah, or just go see that the transmitter was down and then hightail it back inside, lock the door. I mean, yeah,
exactly.
What's up with telling her, like, with June that, like, I'm feeling better now, but then second later she's, like, huffing and puffing like she got kicked in the chest. It was like, it's like, girl, just stay inside.
Yeah, and she's not left-handed either.
This is one of those times when we could have made an entire category of the podcast for Luciana.
Yes,
because we got another point that is made here. Kyle, why don't you bring it up?
Deanna from Aim for the Head podcast says, I'm sure everyone is going to pick this for their weak sauce, but man, how dumb was Luciana?
Indeed.
Yep.
Yeah. Steve didn't actually mention Luciana, at least in his weak sauce. He says, Morgan losing his stick. I don't know much about radiation exposure, so it may or may not be true that it's gone completely. And I do know a little bit more about it. It's gone. It's like you get any radiation on something like that, and it can't be eliminated because, like she said, it's porous, so you can't wash it off. It's basically it's stuck to the cells, and there's nothing to be done. So Morgan, he's lost his stick, and he's gonna have to make a new one.
Yep.
So that's all there is to say about it.
End of story.
Yeah.
Glynis from Toronto says, they're going to draw out the season by the looks of it. We didn't see either the Riot Gear mystery team and Althea's whereabouts or Logan. For Olstrand's gift of the gab and Daniel stating he talks too much, Strand didn't really explain himself well on his and his group's true situation. But that isn't isolated to Fear the Walking Dead. They do it a lot in The Walking Dead, too. They pick and choose what info they impart to one another. So one gets a disjointed picture of what transpired.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot dispute that at all. It is a trope in Walking Dead universe, especially selective telling of the situation, or, you know, at an instant where they need to be eloquent, suddenly they're tongue twisted. So you've got a guy with the gift of gab like Strand, and suddenly he can't speak. You know, he can't say the things that he needs to say. And they rely upon this so much, and I'm sick of it.
Agreed.
It is not a good way to tell a story every time like this. Like they did it last week. We didn't really talk too much about it, but the kids, the kids not fessing up to say, you know, what's going on around here. They say, you know, Annie just says like, oh, you'll see. And they see something and somebody didn't just say, you know, what the hell's going on around here? You know, like tell us right now or, you know, whatever. Nobody like gets her to fess up. It's just left alone. They go, oh.
I know. Why, this would be the perfect time to ask that question.
Yeah.
Well, what more? Like,
yeah.
The more you know, there's no stopping.
Yeah. I really should ask this question, but man, I'm hungry. Let's eat. They rely upon this far, far too much. All right, Mark, going to you. What do you have for weak sauce?
Well, I have to agree with Steve when he said Morgan losing his stick. To me, that is not Morgan to me. He better get it back or make one of his own. So you kind of already summed up. He's going to have to make one of his own.
I would recommend making one made out of aluminum or something. So this does not happen again.
Get into the future. Yeah. New materials.
Yeah.
Continue on with mine, which would be Luciana. Need I say more? John Dory is going to lose his gun that he left her.
I know, and she wasted all the bullets. I was so about to scream, and then I was like, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And believe me, we have more to say about Luciana throughout this. There's some really good stuff that's going to come up in Lara's voicemail. So. All right, Kyle, what do you have?
Yeah, just to speak on another trope, how do the walkers still sneak up on people? I mean, Strand, like, when he was walking up to Daniel's compound, like, did he not see that walker, like, down the street? Like, did he not, like, I don't understand it. Like, he goes up to the gate, he sees the iron bars or whatever, like, on the ground, or the, you know, the spikes, and then this walker just, like, ah! And then, you know, it's like, he's right behind him, and it's like, yeah. Did you not see him?
Yeah, it's pretty silly.
Yeah, I guess there's, you know, there's new pop out of the ground walkers.
Or stealth mode walkers.
Yeah, stealth mode. They crawl like tremors. They just grow into the ground and pop up.
I like that fan theory that everyone in the zombie apocalypse is half deaf.
Deaf.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Another one.
Yeah, it's like, and this was another part I almost really like kind of shook my head and I don't know. It made me angry. It was like, so they brought weapons with them on the plane, but why the heck did they not, like, why did they leave them back there? Why didn't they go back and get them? I mean, you know, John came back and see, like, the last episode was like, oh, I found some guns and, like, you know, some medical supplies.
Yeah.
Oh, did you forget the guns in the chest that you guys brought with you?
Like, I wondered about that myself.
I was like, wait, that's like a highly important thing in this world that you need.
Very true.
So that I just was like, what? Oh, of course you left them that now someone stole them.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyways.
All right. Well, mine I focused a bit upon the Strand Daniel thing, and it was something I hadn't thought of initially, but in watching it and I listened to Jason and Rima talking about the episode as well on Walking Dead Cast. Give them a shout out. If Strand is worried that Daniel will kill him, why does he go there alone? Like, does he suspect that he would kill all of them? Like, if he brought, like, Charlie, is he going to kill Charlie? Come on. I don't understand that. It makes no sense.
Me neither. Yeah, it makes sense in the sense that you wouldn't go there if this person hates your guts, and now I'm going to he's going to shoot me.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I didn't get why he even let him inside to begin with. It was just like, there's no reason for you to let him inside. You can be like, oh, Strand, great to see you. Now bye. You know, like, go away.
Yeah, it's weird.
It was convenient.
Yeah. Yeah, and it seemed a bit of a, you know, about face or something. But there's been a lot talking already and more coming about Luciana. But I just want to say, I don't know if it was Danae Garcia's portrayal of it's the drugs talking, you know, the whole stuff about the accordion. I almost gave it like seven and a half accordions, or if it's the writing or directing. We were talking about this prior to us starting. Like, I tend to think it might be all three. But she's okay. So she's on. I'll mention this. I know what it's like to be on certain kind of drugs, and like, it's almost like your filter is gone. I remember this was several years back when I had a colonoscopy. Coming off the drugs that they sedated me with, I had like no filter, and you know, first I was laughing uncontrollably, and then, you know, I was saying stupid stuff, and it was similar to how, you know, she acted. So I don't know if she got some kind of weird psychogenic drug, or if she just got painkillers. Now, as far as I know, she just got painkillers. Well, yeah. Painkillers don't make you say weird stuff for the most part, or if they do, it's not so much that, it's that they're slurring and they, you know, they're tired and they're, you know, they can't, they're, you know, they're slurring words.
We've seen those videos of people that get root canals. Like, that's
exactly
yeah,
that's not what happened. She seemed lucid for the most part. You know, she was talking in full sentences and being able to enunciate properly. She was just saying weird things about accordions and talking about, I think she said something weird to Strand about her jacket or something like that.
Yeah. That's what I got too. Cause like and then I went back, third watch that I did, but it was like, I noticed it too. Cause she was kind of like making these comments and she's supposed to be on drugs, but it almost sounded like she was talking like she was a child, like broken sentences, but it didn't come off at all. Like, it just sounded stupid.
Yeah. And that's like I said before, if it was like someone with a damaged filter and, you know, like whatever they gave me when I had that colonoscopy, I've never had whatever that was again, but I really want it. it was pretty wild stuff. But
I asked for a lollipop after mine. Yeah.
anyway, so it just didn't seem to so this is why I'm thinking it, I don't know, was it the problem there in how she portrayed it, or was it a problem with the directing? And I think this director, I believe it's her first time directing any of the Walking Dead franchise. I'll look her up prior to us finishing. I already said that, but I believe I didn't recognize her name. So it could be that. It could have been the writing, just, you know, direct, you know, basically writing something that doesn't fit how you would talk. But then again, see what I'm saying? I don't really know where the problem lies. I have to think the problem lies in all three. Yeah. She didn't portray it like someone who's stoned. She portrayed it like someone, well, okay, she portrayed it like someone who is on PCP, not someone who's on Vicodin, you know, for example. Not that I know either thing. But one is, you know, psychotropic, and one is, you know, like a,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. I'll just say that I think Danai is a good enough actress that I probably would lean on the side of writing and directing. And then she probably went like one take, and then they're like, okay, cool, that sounds great. You know, maybe it was something like that, but I don't think
And, you know, like, if she's, I don't know. I've heard different things to say. I mean, I never really knew her from anything else, but I thought she was really good in season two.
Yeah, no,
yeah,
she's, you know, had moments, and she's been fine. Just writing can destroy you. Yeah. Directing can destroy you.
Yeah, it's very true. Okay, with that, I think we can move on to what sauce.
What?
All right.
Well, Steve from Oklahoma says, Does Daniel not know Luciana?
Yes, and I think that this goes back to what I rated the episode. There's for people like Steve who didn't watch the show prior to season four, there's a whole bit of backstory, and it's especially glaringly obvious in this episode because we see Strand and Daniel acting in a way where people that don't know the show don't understand why they acted in the way that they did. Probably Daniel just looks like a jerk. And yeah, okay, he was a jerk, but he's got reasons.
Yeah.
you know, shoot in the face reasons. That's what I have to say, and I won't get into the detail of this right now, but we'll explain everything you need to know for those people that are coming into it and don't know the first three seasons of the show later. All right, next
is LT from NC. My biggest set of whats go to Grace and the Radiation Zone. I'll give her props for trying to decon Morgan and Alicia, but for her, it isn't going to be the big one dose, but the cumulative doses Grace is getting bouncing around the hot zones. Rather iconic to me that Fear is rolling with the nuclear spill angle this season, since HBO is running Chernobyl.
That is true.
Yeah, very true. All right, Mark, what do you have for what sauce?
What in the blue hell is Luciana doing outside? What? I know we've talked about this so much before, but yeah, I think we kind of answered it ourselves in some way. She's out of her mind. Why didn't Daniel kill Strand when he had the chance? He hates him. Why not just kill him? Something is up with Daniel. Why wouldn't he just obliterate Strand when he saw him?
Shoot him!
chance.
There must be a story there, or a plot, yeah. But... yeah, my Watt Sasa is like everybody else, is Luciana going outside and wasting ammo, and Daniel letting Strand in when he didn't need to help him, and why did he even waste his time? Like, was he fishing for information? Which could be.
Maybe. I guess he wanted to know, you know, what was going on, I guess.
Yeah.
So, is any contact with a radiated walker terminal?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They almost act like it's contagious or something. So when Grace dies, will she look like them if she turns? I'm kind of unclear how this whole thing works. I don't think that that's on me. I think that it could be better explained, and I don't think it is very well explained here.
I think they tried to explain it, though, like with Grace talking about what, you know, she was doing and how they were all holed up into the plant. And then, you know, like she should have done more. And like she's, you know, whatever, she's feeling bad and trying to like clean it up. But yeah, it's not like they really explained much, because was there like this huge meltdown? And so then the people trapped were like, you know, yeah, like get all blistered from the heat or whatever, you know. It's kind of like, that's what you just assume, just because that's what you have to go off of, what we already know about like a nuclear disaster. But then, yeah, like the particles, like if you get exposed, like how long does it take you to die? Like if you get a little exposed, like radiation sickness takes a while. It's unless you get like a high dose. But if it's a walker and they touch you, yeah, you might get exposed, but that's going to take probably a while before you actually start getting symptoms. Burning those other corpses and inhaling it, maybe you're getting at a much higher dose at more concentration. So I could kind of see that. But yeah, it was just like, you just kind of was like, oh, well, I guess just don't get near them or let them touch
you. Like, I don't know if they're trying to, like, I did not watch the episode live this week. I watched it solely on the AMC app. So I don't know, like, was it exactly 10 o'clock when it was done? Because it was short. At least according to the AMC app, it was like 41 minutes and 42 seconds or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it live, but like, yeah, it probably ended right on time.
So I don't know if that means that the rest of the season they're going to try to keep them, you know, right at an hour, or if they're going to bleed over like they do sometimes. I don't know. But that was the one thing. It's like, well, you know, if it was a question of them cutting dialogue, it's like, well, they always go over anyway, so who cares?
Yeah.
But if they're going to end up doing this all through the season and end right at 10 o'clock, I don't know. But it's just, I think that there could have been more exposition here to explain this, because, you know, and the whole thing about Chernobyl, I think it's funny. We didn't talk about that before. I haven't watched Chernobyl, but I've heard really good things about it.
Same here. It's
Mark, have you seen it?
No, I haven't. But I also think they try to cash in on the whole Godzilla thing, considering Godzilla just launched too.
It's just a radiation summer.
Exactly.
It's all nuclear.
Yeah. All righty. Well, let's move on to the sad variety. All right. Well, we only got one sad from our listeners, and it was from Diana from Aim for the Head podcast. Hi, Diana. She says, I like how Morgan lost his stick, but it doesn't appear to have lost himself. Maybe he's growing. And I'll give Morgan a sad sauce here for having to give up his stick. So that's my sad sauce. Mark, you have a sad sauce?
As much as it was a what sauce, but Luciana, I think she will be a goner come that mid-season finale with the way she's acting, and I don't think it's the drugs.
I think we can probably all agree that her end is soon.
Yeah, well, if for any reason, you know, it's the way that her character is written. It's just not written well.
They're leaving her out of a lot of stuff. They just injured her from the start and just pushed her off into the corner.
Yeah. They did that in season three and just pushed her off. It's like the character has nothing to do without a man, and so she fails, what is it called, the Bechdel test or something. It's like she can't function without a man. That's not exactly true.
Not like okay? that, but yeah, like another an opposite or some kind of
to play off of,
right?
Yeah,
yeah.
But
could be another woman for all we know.
There's the problem is just not enough depth there, and again, I think it's what they've written, you know. There's more to talk about with her, so. We're just going to keep saying that, but, all right, Kyle, what about you?
Yeah, I just kind of, again, with Morgan losing a stick, can't he just cut off the part that was contaminated?
I mean,
he might get a shorter and shorter stick, but
I don't
have a twig.
I don't think that's how it works. It's the same thing, like with, say, a baseball bat. If it gets, exposed to something, doesn't matter if it's just the tip of it, the whole thing is, you know, rotted out. Then cutting it off, you know, it's not like cutting off an arm or something like that. It's, well, maybe it should be. I don't know, but.
Well, how awesome. He should like dip it in like some kind of like metal so that it's like irradiated, but like still protects him and he can like infect everybody with his stick.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Well, he could be a carrier.
New weapon.
Or he could just grab a pipe. A long pipe fencing.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's what he ends up with is some kind of piece of a fence or something. All right, so let's move on to our feedback, and we've gotten some we got three voicemails this week.
We can talk about it. Done talking. Time to listen.
Okay, so our first is from friend of the show, Steve.
Hello, Fear the Walking Dead talk through. This is Steve from Oklahoma City. And, you know, not having watched this show before the fourth season, really, or it's been a long time since I watched Fear. I don't have the same connection with some of these characters that everybody else does. So I don't understand Daniel being so suspicious and not liking Strand. I don't know Strand's character before seeing him in season four. So, I mean, I know there were some things about him being kind of a jerk and stuff, but that got tempered. So it's unfortunate that Daniel can't seem to look past that. I chuckled when John said about the radios, about worried about who's listening. And I thought, it's about time, John, you're worried about who's listening on the radio. And I asked this question in my feedback in my What Sauce. And does Daniel not know Luciana? Wasn't he around in the show before she came? Or do I not understand that relationship there? I mean, I know she had some sort of relationship with Nick, and why doesn't Daniel know? Because it seems like when Strand says that he knows, he's telling Luciana, I know him, he's saying it like Luciana doesn't know who Daniel is. So you guys might be able to explain that to me. Anyway, just real quick notes. I left my rating and some sauces on the Facebook comments. Talk to you later.
All right. Well, thanks, Steve. And before we get to talking about this, we'll just give you the Showcase Award. So I don't forget. All right. Thank you so much, Steve. As usual, great voicemail. Okay. So, yeah, this is a problem. I think that they did not explain this. They're expecting people to understand that. And even, Steve, you didn't watch the show from seasons 1 to 3, but I'll bet you that the casual viewer does not realize that those two don't know each other. So, just to explain this, no, Daniel does not know Luciana. Their times on the show didn't intersect. Now, what happens is Daniel was in the show all of season one, from the second episode to the sixth episode of season one, and then the first half of season two. Luciana comes in the very next episode, so they don't intersect. And then Luciana leaves the show in season three. Daniel comes back, but they don't actually know that each other is around until, what is it, I think episode 11 or something like that, when Daniel and Madison make contact. So Luciana and Luciana had been gone, had left the camp that they were at. So that's why there is the Broke Jaw Ranch. So she left Broke Jaw Ranch, and Daniel, who was at the dam in season three, the people that are at the ranch eventually come to the dam, but Luciana is gone. They meet up with her again some point between season three and four, which we never find out. But basically, those two don't know each other. Now, Daniel and Strand, this is explained in Laura's voicemail. I'll just let her sum it up because she sums it up in a very direct way. So, but let's just say that they have a sordid history together, and they crossed a few times, but it was all on Strand, I would say. So that's why. And Daniel knew Strand, Alicia, Nick, and Madison, but only Alicia and Strand are the ones alive. So that's basically the summary of it. Do you guys have anything else to say about Steve's voicemail?
No.
Nope.
Okay.
But only to recommend to Steve, you need to go look and watch seasons 1 to 3.
I agree. And you may get to a point in season 2 where you want to rage quit. Just wait it out. Just wait it out, because it gets way better in season 3. Anyway, all right, let's move on to Alex's voicemail.
Hey, guys, this is Alex from New Jersey. I'm going to be talking about the Walking Dead talk through. I just saw the last episode of Fear and I liked it. I thought, you know, I didn't get a chance to give feedback for the first episode. I thought it came out with a bang with the airplane crash, but this episode I thought was really fun with the, you can't get much better than toxic zombies. I just wish they were glowing, but you know, they probably didn't have that from the budget. I'm a little, my what sauce was a little, why is Daniel back? I mean, I love the banter between him and Victor. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that for me, but it's just frustrating. Like, where are they going? And Alicia's character, she's just so angry. I think they're either trying to turn her into Madison or Morgan, or she just needs to be herself. Little disappointed that Morgan lost his staff. You know, I think the group right now is just very fractured. One of the things that I blame on this whole series is it's all Angela Kang's fault. And what do I mean by that? She did such a great job with Walking Dead. I think that, you know, with Scott M. Gimple's, fingers on all this, it's just so slow compared to what they did last season in Walking Dead. But I love the show. I'm going to ride it out till the end. And I can't wait to see next week. In terms of my rating system, I gave it, let me just make sure I get this right because I want to make sure. We gave it 8 out of 10 radioactive hanging zombie heads. Absolutely. The one last thing is, you know, and I think this is a what sauce. Are they recycling all the other, gags from Walking Dead with the hanging, heads and the roadblocks and all this other stuff? That being said, the awesome sauce was the, that new character, the scientist. I don't know if she's going to last much longer because she's supposedly sick, but I just liked, you know, the science part of it. And, you know, somebody that's smart that can kind of figure stuff out. Have a great show, guys. Talk to you soon.
Well, I just have to, of course, give you the Showcase Award. Well, thank you so much, Alex. And nice to hear from you again after you were co-host on episode 98 of The Walking Dead Talk Crew. So, good to see you. Ooh, that went too quick. Need to check that. Let's set the fade.
Anyway. I don't know what the hell's going on in the most wonderful way.
I couldn't stop it after. It's like, oh, stop it.
That okay. Was kind of a fitting clip.
Yeah, considering she sounded like Max Headroom.
All right, so I wanted to highlight one thing you said, Alex. It's Angela Kang's fault. That's an interesting way of looking at it.
Meaning that she's really good at what she does, and they're not following through with the way she's leading the pack.
I guess the idea there is that the way that she's written the show is, and I would agree with this, that she did such a good job, it makes this show look that much worse when it's not doing a good job. I don't know. I would tend to agree with it, but I would also say that what I'm seeing here is still better than some of what we saw in season 2. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not everything that's wrong, but there are some, like, what I guess I'm, like, with the exception of Luciana, I would say that the characters are written well. The dialogue is, for the most part, I'd say okay. With the exception of Luciana, it's like, what the heck? It's like they were on drugs when they wrote her character. But for everybody else, it's everything seems okay to me. But it's the story that it's like how they're writing the story arc that I've had problems with, and I had problems with it last year, especially in 4B. You know, so I guess I could agree with that to a certain extent, but I would say that the bulk of the problem here is just, you know, they should just be not making these mistakes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I agree.
And you know, like, why is Gimple, why is it, like, is he just not paying enough attention? I don't know. So maybe he's too busy, you know, writing the next series or the movies or something and just not paying attention to the show.
And to his comic book with Robert.
I hope he's not spending a ton of time with that. Do you guys have anything else to say about Alex's voicemail?
No, good voicemail.
Yeah, it's good, made points. Good points.
So our final voicemail is a great one, I would say, and it is from Lara from Denver.
Hi there, Brian, Kyle, maybe Mark, and whomever else may be on the show today. This is my feedback for season 4, episode 2 of Fear the Walking Dead. I was just going to leave feedback on the Facebook page, and then when I realized how much I had, I thought it'd be better to send you a voicemail, which is funny that I had so much feedback for an episode I didn't really care for. So here's my score. 5.5 Toxic Avengers out of 10. My awesome sauce is Daniel Salazar. And, aw, a kitty! Thank God we got a real season 3 character back again. Not that watered down by the new showrunner's version of our fear characters. At first I was concerned by Daniel's reaction to meeting Strand and being so accommodating and nice about it because he didn't shoot him. It's not like Strand borrowed his record collection and never gave it back. Strand shot Daniel in the face. When Daniel sent Victor off into the night with no weapons and no plane, I thought, yes, that is our Daniel Salazar. My weak sauce is everything else. Of course, we got no backstory on how Daniel escaped the dam with Nick or how they got separated. He just barely seemed fazed when he heard about Nick and Madison. And once again, the current showrunners just kind of hand-waved the show's history. If that had happened on the main show, when they switched showrunners, viewers would have rioted. What? Shane? Shane who? Ugh. The whole main storyline was kind of boring. The new character, Grace, was kind of boring. You would think toxic zombies would at least be over-the-top crazy or at least super gross and creepy, but it just felt really flat and uninteresting. And what is the theme of this episode? Oh, is it, can we come back from the things we've done? Hello? Can someone please call Angela King, or one of the other main show writers, or even maybe a talented college intern? Ugh, I'm getting so worn out on this same old basic theme over and over again. Okay, and Luciana. I really do not want to complain about her. I do think that her character has a right to be on the show because I don't feel that just because a main character dies on a show that their love interest has no further use. A lot of people didn't understand Enid being around on the main show, but I was liking her character, and I am really against the thought that you have to leave the show just because your better half is no longer there, especially because that sentiment tends to be directed at female characters. Like, if they don't have their man, they have no purpose, which is actually a regressive ideology of less enlightened societies and people. So, I mean, if Madison had just left the show after Travis died, we would have never had that amazing season 3. But the showrunners have taken no opportunity to develop her as an interesting character on her own. And in fact, she's become less interesting than when we first met her. And I'm sorry to say, but the actress is somewhat weak and one-dimensional. Maybe this just is not the right show for her. My what sauce, is what happened in this episode? I had to rewind it a couple of times to figure out what was going on, and that usually never happens when I'm watching a show. I can generally keep up, but I was just so uninvested in this story, I didn't care. My aw sauce is, like I said before, aw, Kitty! I love Skidmark. I can't wait to see more of him. In closing, I don't know, I'm kind of bummed. I've been a fan of the show since episode one. I watched every week and watched it improve and get better and better. And even after the takeover, crossover, I still championed these characters and actors. And I feel the actors are working really hard to make this work. But it's like being in a workplace where the employees are really kicking butt, but the management just doesn't give a damn. But I'd almost given up on The Walking Dead before Angela Kang came back to bring it back from the dead, so to speak. And so there is some hope for Fear as well. At least we have Daniel back. And a kitty! One more thing. Nosferatu was awesome. Okay, that's my rant. Maybe you guys can reel me in some.
Thank you, Laura.
No, I don't think I can. I reel you in. Can you guys reel her in?
Hope. I have hope. Very limited hope. I mean, I get what she is saying, because I feel like, especially all of us that have been watching it since season one, since the day one, it's like one of the fun things about watching a show as it progresses is to see it, like, you know, markedly get better and better, and they figure their things out, and then the characters get, you know, stronger. And then you kind of, after all that time, which can be years, you know, you're like, these people I've been with, like, for, you know, a long time, and I love them and I care for them. And we went from being to that point to just like, yeah, the dam broke, washed everything away. And it was like, okay, what's next? So I would say, if you have nothing better to do on a Sunday, or you can record it on DVR, maybe they can figure some things out and maybe it could be interesting. But if this is going to be a Game of Thrones kind of situation, it's like, it's, we're going to be, we had our build up and now it's just a wash.
They're not developing the original characters to some degree. Alicia more than anybody, but they get the new people in, that was it. And then I feel that they're just trying to write off Luciana in some way.
Yeah. Well, I still don't understand why they brought her character back. After they killed off Nick, they could have given her an interesting story, but they just haven't done it.
She could have walked away and just, I can't be with you people because I lost Nick, and now I'm just going to ride off in the sunset and be done.
Right. Before I forget, of course, thank you so much, Laura, for an amazing voicemail. Really enjoyed this one. All right. So getting to this, I think we have the issue that the lack of the backstory, in other words, the lack of the things that we don't know happened between season 3 and season 4 are now exacerbated by the lack of a backstory. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, you know, now we're seeing a character of Daniel, and the new viewers don't really get the gist of what had happened before. So they didn't explain, you know, what happened to the characters there. And then they aren't explaining the characters for the new viewers. So it's like a double whammy. But as far as Luciana, I think I had mentioned it already, but I agree with you 100%. It's like they haven't written her character right. I don't know if I don't know if it's Danae Garcia or not. I mean, the portrayal is a bit one note, but like I said, she was really good in season two. I really liked her character in season two, but I haven't liked it since. And I don't know why that is. I haven't figured that out. So I don't know what to say. I don't. It's like they haven't known what to do with her since they killed Dick off. And I just thought maybe this was an attempt at, you know, giving her some comedy or something like that, but it just didn't feel right.
Maybe they're trying to send her off on a helicopter and her be a bee.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, she better not show up into a movie.
Or she could be the first bee that suffers. Who knows?
Lucy, do you know Morgan?
Well, and not to, like, if this is a spoiler or not, if you didn't see the, you know, the next episode after this episode, like, she looks like she's gotten, you know, more well or whatever, but the way she's talking, like, I don't know what was going on, but she's, to me, I'm feeling like they're leading her to her death, and like, I don't know, it's just like, the, you know, for next season's or next week's episode, it just had a lot of Luciana in
maybe
it.
Maybe that's her final story.
Like, well, no, that's why I feel like maybe that's what they're doing, and they're just going to just somehow finally write her off, and maybe she'll do something or save a cat. I don't know.
Better not be a flirt cat.
Give a beer to a cat, you know, like.
I know dogs will drink beer, but I've never seen a cat drink beer.
I was at least trying to refer to polar bear.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, of course.
But anyways, I don't know. We'll see. I don't think she's same long here for this show, so.
Yeah, but the question you got to ask is why? I mean,
I think they pointed it out quite obviously from the very first episode. She's a red shirt.
Lieutenant Luciana, security officer.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I just a quick thing, like, you know, that is kind of the hard thing about for us that we've watched the show since the beginning, but is as a new viewer, like, they aren't doing any like backstory. There wasn't even a flashback of seeing Daniel getting shot, you know, or like a quick
little, yeah, there's no nods other. Yeah, to, so, yeah, the previous seasons,
right. And so then that begs the question, then why bring them back to begin with? And that's like, is it because of ratings? Is it to like, oh, because those of us have watched the show since the beginning be like, oh yeah, awesome, Daniel's back? But I, you know, I don't know, it's kind of, you have to question that.
It's so, like I say, I tend to think it's like, oh, hey, Ruben Blades is available for the next, you know, 6 weeks. Oh, let's bring him back. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know, but maybe this is going to tell some kind of story arc for Strand.
No, they have to develop him a little bit more. I mean, maybe he'll. That's definitely. Yeah, we don't know where last season ended off and how he became where he is now, so.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they didn't describe any of that, and, you know, maybe we're going to get that story, but we haven't yet. You know, maybe it's on the tape. Maybe we just have to see it on the tape. I doubt it. It's probably just tells one story.
Yeah.
You know, that's why the tape's called Skidmark.
Well, I think that's more about Daniel.
Probably shows 25 minutes of the cat.
Stop licking your butt.
Well, I mean, that place was pretty big of Daniel's. So maybe he's like, oh, hold on 1 second. I have to go to the bathroom. And then he had to walk all the way to the other side of the compound. So that's 20 minutes with the cat.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. All right. Shall we continue?
All right. Forward? Let's continue. Mark, you have some feedback from Diana.
Yeah, Diana from Aim for the Head podcast says, overall, this was a good, not great episode. I liked the intro of Grace and hope we see her again, which we all do. I also hope we see Daniel again, or that was the most wasted appearance ever. I'm still confused about the geography and where the hell are Sarah and Wendell?
Not in this episode. Probably yes. Enjoying a few beer bows, Jimbo.
Yeah, that are kind of like really bad wine.
Yeah. I think I have an idea of the geography, and we talk a little bit about this later, at least part of it. So we'll just give that little teaser and get into it when it's time to get into our own feedback. So,
all right, cool.
All right, next.
All right, next is Todd from Ohio. He says, it was a slower episode, but I liked the introduction of the new character. Really hope her group ties into one of the other plot lines in the show. Rick, Dwight, Heath, Al, really nice seeing Daniel again, but do not like that he couldn't get convinced to help Strand. I am very nervous for Luciana now. This is the drugs talking, right? Her new affinity for the accordion? No, I think something is happening to her brain and concern for her decision-making skills later in the episode.
The other question I have is, will she play the accordion by the end of the season?
I have one other question. Maybe one of those missing zombies with the that little what was
dosimeter or whatever
dosimeters, maybe that was near her at some point too, who knows.
Her brain got irradiated.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, so we've got some feedback here from Dieta from Louisville. At least I think that's where you are these days, Dieta. For that matter, if we've gotten any of these wrong, please let us know. The Daniel and Strand reunion was interesting. He really doesn't like Strand, huh? I was surprised when, after Daniel heard Strand talking to Luciana, he escorted him out into the night with gunshots. Didn't he do that before? With, what was that? Thinking emoji. At the hotel. I thought he was going to help them, but he didn't, sending Strand planeless and out the door. He said, everybody is strong. They will figure it out. Wow, Daniel. And I'll correct you right there. Daniel and Strand had that kind of interaction, but it was at the dam. It wasn't at the hotel. John and June walking around the camp reminded me of Camp Crystal Lake in Friday the 13th. I kept waiting for Jason to come around the corner at Camp Cackleberry, but no kids or Al or Jason. With squinting smiley face. Just a camp of full radioactive walkers. Overall, I agree with what was said in the podcast. Fear the Walking Dead has too many time jumps. Every time we come back from a break, we get thrust into another story like, wait, what happened? How did we get here? We never got any answers about what happened after the dam. How did they all end up back together? And last season, they found the denim warehouse. Then they lose the denim warehouse the first episode back. Wait, what happened while we were on break? Too many questions. And where the hell is Wendell, Sarah, and Charlie? Oh, she's also wondering the same question. Are they just chilling in the truck, drinking beer? Well, that was my answer. This season's trailer made it look like it was going to be an epic season. I guess we will see. Shrug head, or should I say female shrug. Overall, it was a decent episode. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I can't complain or can't. Come back or anything with that.
Yeah. It's still good enough to cover. It's just not great.
Yeah.
You know, it's decent. I want to keep watching, but it's definitely not a home run. It's more like a single. All right. Next.
LT from NC says, so I have to ask right off the bat, why did Strand abandon the SWAT bus? Did I miss something last week? Daniel survived and has the super stash compound, which did not shock me. Obviously, something happened between him and Strand, which I missed. since I quit watching at the end of season one, and there was no smooth talking this way out of it for Strand. So Luciana wins the Stay in the House Carl award. Maybe she can't feel her fingers, but she is well enough to leave her nice, safe, secure shed to look outside when she hears a noise. I'm wondering if we'll find out who looted the airplane when we find out who has the severed head dangly fetish. The camp cabins full of walkers make me wonder if those are the folks that made the kids and the van so scared. I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out next, and maybe we'll set another peek at the Three Rings crew.
That's interesting about that. Like, I don't think that's what the kids are afraid of, but I mean, do those kids know those people? How did they not get infected? You know, it's like, it'd be interesting since, or did they just find the van? You know, their story, like, where did they come from?
Well, also, we haven't seen Dwight yet.
No, true.
And who did the weird tactics with the walker parts and stuff? Like, we already seen the bridged gate of walkers.
Yeah.
And we see dangly heads that are, you know, that's very similar to a savior.
Yeah.
And and that could be those, his traps.
It's a trap!
Yeah, it could be a trap set up by Dwight, or just Dwight's way of saying, beware, go away. I don't want you anywhere near me.
Right. But yeah. Then why? He's the one. That's the question, though. It's like, is he with this mysterious group? Is he, you know, was he looking for, I totally forgot her name.
His wife.
His wife. You know, like, there's all the questions. So, I mean, it's like, I still see him being on the outside of whatever's going on and then coming in, and maybe he just knows something or has seen something, but I don't know. Well, I guess we will find out.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next.
All right. Glennis from Toronto. She says, so Grace isn't going to be long for this world. A pity when she's so organized and caring. At least Morgan had his shower out of the deal and got to wear an awesome Texas t-shirt. I'm expecting Dwight to make his appearance every time they play the spooky music when John and June approached that house and when Luciana went outside to check on the noise. I wonder if Daniel will help Strand after all, or is this the last we'll see of him and Skidmark? I do hope he's in more episodes. He will probably be, as Skidmark is the title of the upcoming episode, season 5, episode 4. It's a bit concerning that Talking Dead for Fear of the Walking Dead is only back for, season 5, episode 8. Last season, they had Talking Dead for Fear of the Walking Dead after each episode. Maybe just Chris Hardwick timetable or trying to get eyeballs on that other program, Nosferatu, which screens straight after Fear of the Walking Dead. Well, I guess we kind of already had a comment about, you know, the saviorish like walkers and heads, if Dwight has anything to do with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does fit the MO. So, and if that ends up being the case, it wouldn't be a shock, I guess.
Yeah. No. I just wonder why. I still, like, why would he be doing that to them?
Yeah.
Like, for what reason?
I don't know. Maybe he's trying to keep the kids out. Like, I could see him trying to do that just to scare the kids away.
Or maybe he thinks the kids are with them, and that's why, you know.
Yeah.
They're gone. They didn't stay with them.
Well, do you think that it was Dwight that took Al?
No, because I question why would Dwight want to then take the body of the soldier guy unless he was also on the same kind of thing and thought maybe that she had something to do with it because she was rummaging through papers, so maybe he, and a camera, so maybe he could have. That's a good question.
Yeah, I
think there's two stories going on at the same time, and we just haven't gotten clarification at this point.
Like, I don't want to try to reach into something that's not really there just because I'm trying to make something happen. So I like the there's two. Oh, well, actually, even with this episode, the whole radiation and all that stuff, we already last episode were talking about I don't know, maybe it's a scare tactic, maybe it was this other group, and it turns out it was just, you know, a woman who worked at this nuclear plant that was trying to clean up her mess. Had nothing to do, you know, with anything else.
All right, so that's it for our feedback. So we're just on to our notes. Mark, do you have anything additional to add?
No.
All right, Kyle, how about you?
Yeah, and now that you kind of mentioned something about I don't know if you are in any agreement with what I kind of came across, or
I was
shooting at the dark.
No, you and I are in agreement here.
Okay. Well, so basically from the beginning of the episode, seeing Strand, so our whole question was where are they? You know, we thought maybe they're Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, you know, what the heck? Well, then we see in the first, opening with Strand, he leaves the SWAT van and he's walking up, and there's that sign that says, I looked it up. I was zoomed in. It was Millie's Mattresses, the softest pillow tops in El Paso.
Right.
So he's near El Paso.
Right.
So then that means where's the rest of the group? Well, I looked up, and it was kind of hard to find because, trying to Google search actually for nuclear plants is not really easy. And so the only one I could find that was in or near El Paso, there's one in Arizona, and there's also one that's just outside of Fort Worth, Texas.
Right.
But then if you try to look up where the mountain ranges or mountains in general are, there's very limited towards Fort Worth, but of course, when you get in Arizona, there's quite a few. So, and then El Paso, when you search for El Paso nuclear plants, they have some kind of long history of their power company, El Paso Electric, and they get a lot of their energy or something like that. It was from a nuclear plant in Arizona.
Yeah.
And that was who was feeding them a lot more of their electricity needs after World War II. So now it's what is 13 miles, where would 13 miles south of where that plant was to be, where our group might be. And I'm assuming it's probably more in Arizona, but
yeah,
I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I found similar things. I did find the same thing you found, that there were only two nuclear plants in Texas. One is around Houston, one's around, it's about 60 miles, I think, outside of Fort Worth.
But
it's still considered, the county that it's in is still considered part of the Metroplex. So it's, I don't believe that is considered mountainous. Now that's, it's part of I can't remember the name of it, but it's a plateau, and I saw pictures of that area, and it's hilly, but there's nothing there that I would consider mountainous. There are mountains in Texas, but they are directly due north of where El Paso is. It's the northern part of Texas coming close to New Mexico is where
I think that's the one that Glotta, or I can't look, see my picture. Peak.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's no plants there. There's no nuclear plants. So that would indicate, so it would stand to reason that the Denham plant, and I'd have to look to see what river it could be on. It's obviously not on the Rio Grande or something like that. So it's got to be some tributary but relatively close to El Paso, because otherwise it doesn't really make that much sense. So let's say, you know, within a couple hours drive to El Paso. So, so let's say, you know, they drove, you know, an hour and a half to get to this, you know, get back to the, compound and whatever. And then Strand, I don't know if he walked the way.
Yeah.
we don't know that part, but anyway, so they're relatively close to El Paso and this mountain range. It may not even be in Texas, just based on the nuclear plant. So I don't know.
Yeah.
New Mexico, maybe? I don't know.
I mean, that's the only thing I could even, that, the first thing that I looked at, maybe, I don't know if we want to post these on the Facebook group, but it was just like looking at where El Paso is. I mean, it's still a long distance, but when you think if they were flying somewhere, you know, you can cross a lot of ground flying compared to driving. Right. So it's like, then I could totally see them flying for an hour and then crashing, you know, that they can go 500 miles easily, probably.
Yeah. And to what you said, like, I'm looking at the map here and there is, it's really close to go into New Mexico from El Paso. Mm-hmm. And that Guadalupe Peak is the one that you were talking about. That's fairly close to El Paso. So that would stand to reason, but the closest, nuclear plant in Texas, it's called Comanche Peak, and that's the one that I found as well. And you know, that's way far away.
Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, I'm sure creative license, okay, get it, but you know, with at least what they made a point of showing a sign that said El Paso was Strand, so it's like at least we know that's the general vicinity of where they're at, which that's kind of crazy compared to Austin. They're like heading back to where they started.
Well, they're okay. So, this is interesting. Okay, this makes sense. I'm just looking it up. And in New Mexico, there is a power plant that is Valencia Power LLC. And it is roughly, there's a couple here. There's, there's one that looks like it could be it. It's Maddox Station. It looks like there's a whole bunch here. I don't know which one is considered the right one. Urenco USA, Eunice, New Mexico. And that, wait a minute. There's one even closer. Montana Power Plant. Then that's like right over the border.
Oh, okay.
New Mexico.
From El Paso. So then, all that is pretty mountainous, or at least hilly, like, you know, more rugged, that could definitely make more, you know, make sense that they were just up just a little bit past, you know, north of El Paso.
I don't know. The it may not be that. I see a bunch of stuff pop.
I know. It was hard to find anything because it seemed, even like Wikipedia was like, oh, this was just a proposed plant that never even got off the ground.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway. Oh,
yeah. If you don't have anything else to say for that.
No, that's it.
My next thing was like, you know, so I wondered about the radiation. I mean, we kind of talked about this. It was just like, is it really that toxic? You know, it was like, would you get sick? Like, not to say that you wouldn't get sick, but how much do you need? Like, or is it just a single particle? And then you just like, you're, you know, like contaminated. And then I was kind of like, well, Alicia, the last episode, you know, when she was like on her Walker killing spree, like she had blood all over her face, all over her body. And we don't know if any of those, you know, were contaminated. You know, Grace was saying, you know, it's all like, oh, you knocked down my fence. You know, it's like, I don't have any bird traps over here. So that kind of put me thinking that, like, oh gosh, I don't know. Should we be worried a little bit about her? Or is anybody else in the group, you know, got irradiated? But in the end, overall, I liked this episode because it was like meeting Grace, who has nothing to do with the mysterious three ring circus. I just liked that she was just a survivor. Trying to redeem herself or what, you know, what happened to the power plant? Cause, you know, redemption is something our group is wanting. And it was kind of nice to see our group actually getting to help someone.
Yeah.
Even if it was kind of forced because, you know, they could have been contaminated and she was trying to like protect them. But then after Morgan and Alicia's pep talk, I just feel like, you know, Alicia is starting to drop her barriers. And then she even kind of said to Morgan, it was like, yeah, you said this was going to be hard. And, you know, it's kind of like helping someone, but in the end, knowing that you can't save them.
Right.
You know, because she did say, she's like, nope, I'm sick. I'm going to end up dying. But it's like, but can, you know, they still wanted to help her as much as they could.
Did she say she was sick or just that she was contaminated?
She said that she spent more time in there and got more, you know, exposure to particles. And then Morgan even asked her, is like, how long do you have? And she's like, I don't know.
Right.
But she said, yeah, she said she was going to keep going. So, I mean, it's like Chernobyl. you're in that building, whatever, I mean, who knows, you know, like what she experienced because we don't know, but she got exposed and she probably, whether or not it was a little bit or a lot, she knows that eventually she's going to succumb and she's just trying to clean up as many of the, you know, half of whatever the 63 people that I guess were left.
Yeah. And it sounds like a number of them were burned. So,
yeah, I think they was like saying something like, or John said something about like
half,
but yeah, still it's like that story is not going to go anywhere, but it's just, you know, it was, we talked about that where, you know, it's like we didn't get to see what they got to do beforehand. You know, how they, you know, before the plane crash, other than the fact that they obviously didn't have any good track record. And I think even, Alicia mentioned, she was just like, yeah, I went through all the tapes, you know, we tried to, you know, like I couldn't even do anything with their tapes. We couldn't save anybody that way.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of nice to see them actually get to do something of some remarkable good.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. There's, I am thinking that somehow she's not sick, you know, but I don't know how they would quantify that. So, I mean, I think they left it in such a way that if she did fantastically, during the season, they could, you know, write her part in or say, you know, oh, my, here's my twin sister. No, not serious about that part. Yeah. But
she took some potassium iodine pills right before she.
Yeah, I really know, wasn't exposed, or, you know, who knows. But anyway, well, I had a couple of points left. Oh, I'm going to be quick with them, though. I'm very curious how that cat got the name of Skidmark. That's a weird name. I am really curious about how Strand ends up. Like, he fully expects that there's a good chance that Daniels is going to see him and kill him. But I think that I'm more taken by what Daniel does in this episode, because I'm reminded of the Prime Directive. I've been watching a fair bit of episodes of The Next Generation lately, kind of prepping for the
Picard series.
Yeah, and also something I'm gonna mention in a few minutes here. So I've been watching TNG, and that made me think directly of the Prime Directive, you know. So, because he says every time Strand tries to help people, he ends up only hurting them. You know, it's the best of intentions, you know. So I wonder, really, if if Daniel is going to end up helping, you know, because he says, so the I guess there's two points there. The first point is he sounds like he's stating the prime directive, because that's exactly, you know, that's why the Federation doesn't go into a situation, you know, with a less civilized, you know, race or species and help them out, because it just ends up messing things up. So it's a similar kind of thing. It's like Daniel's like, no, I'm not going to help you just because anything happens and it's just going to mess things up. And it is true, you know, like, for example, Strand, you know, kills his lover and but then doesn't kill himself, and that just, you know, throws everything out the and of course the things he did at the dam, you know, again, another example. And these are why Daniel, his actions to Strand, I think, are justifiable, you know, because of the things that Strand has done.
Yeah.
You know, and especially to Daniel. I mean, shot him in the face, and how the heck he survived that, I still don't know how, but he did. Anyway, so it makes me think maybe Daniel is going to save them. And because he says, yes, they do, but not from you, which makes me think, okay, well, maybe it's not prime directive. Maybe what he means is, I just can't trust you to do it. You know, if they really need help, I'm going to go and fly the plane. Yeah, maybe somehow Daniel knows how to fly. or he has some other way of helping them. I don't know, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes from here. But, because he didn't say, like, I'm not going to give you the plane. Right. You know, he just said, I'm not going to give the plane to you, you know? So anyway, that's what I'm thinking may be the case, but we'll see.
Well, there is one thing that Daniel always says, and he says that Strand is always selfish. Everything is for him.
Yes.
And I think Daniel still feels that way in some respects towards Strand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
actions speak louder than words, I think. And, you know, maybe there's something that can be done to change his mind. Yeah. But we'll see. Okay, well, if that's it, let's move on finally to news, ratings, and info.
What the hell is happening?
I have no idea.
All right, well, season 5, episode 2 of Fear the Walking Dead got a 0.51 in the 18 to 49 with 1.687 million viewers. Now, this is down from last week's opener of 0.59. And 1.966. So it's down. It's not horribly down. It isn't the worst that the show's ever gotten, but it's getting close to that level. So we'll have to watch to see where things lie for next week. So, and of course, in case you haven't been paying attention, there was no Talking Dead this week. So, and I'm finding personally, I'm feeling it, because not only is there no Talking Dead, but there's no Inside the Episode video that you'll see on AMC.com. You'll also see it posted on YouTube. So there's none of that. There's no them, you know, just breaking apart like one of the stunts in the episode. So there's all that kind of backstory stuff we're not getting from this series anymore. All we're getting is, you know, a sneak peek of next week and them covering the next, like the biggest kill of the week or something, which it's very much, I would like to know the motivation, you know, some of the things that they're doing. I find that without it, I'm missing that those videos.
Yeah, that and Talking Dead.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I would add, they are still filming.
Right.
They have another 2 weeks of filming, so maybe they didn't have prep and ready to get that out per maybe. Episode beforehand. Who knows?
Yeah.
And on top of that, AMC Premiere did something that they didn't do before, which with the regular Walking Dead, they only did the season premiere episode. And then the next time we'd seen an episode would be the mid-season, I believe, and then the season finale. This is the first time that they actually did a second episode.
Right.
And I'm wondering if they're going to continue it on that way.
That is what the app says. The app is saying that they're going to make every episode this season available 48 hours ahead.
I'm wondering if they'll do that with the main show as well.
Maybe. I mean, they did that, I think, with the first episode last season and maybe the mid-season premiere, possibly. I don't know about that for 100% sure. Maybe they will. And certainly for us covering it, I like it because it gives me more time to watch things. I don't have to, you know, structure my Sunday nights, and you know, I can kind of watch it at my leisure. So
yeah, I like it,
but you know, I don't like that the coverage is not there. So it is good that they're making the episodes available to us, but I miss Talking Dead. I miss the inside the episode. Like they didn't even do it for episode one. Even all they did was Talking Dead, but now they're not, you know, now we don't have any of that stuff. So
yeah.
And I didn't go to look, there may be articles about it, but I didn't find any. You know, sometimes they get interviewed by Hollywood Reporter or something like that, but I didn't really see any. You guys can look.
Yeah.
if you are so apt. But like I say, when you look at the charts, it's not the worst rating and that it's ever been, but it's close. So there were a few episodes in last season near the end that were lower. So. All right. So like I said, I don't really have any info about this episode other than what we've already said. So I do have some news, a couple of news items are basically on past cast members. So a lot of you guys have talked about bringing Madison back, but unfortunately, I think it's going to end up being because Kim Dickens has been announced as joining the new USA Network crime anthology series, Briar Patch, as a series regular, opposite Rosario Dawson. It's Briar Patch is based on a Ross Thomas novel, and it describes her character as Dickens will play Chief of Police Eve Raytech, an authoritative firecracker who is committed to finding who killed Allegra's sister and Allegra's Dawson's character. She is a boot-stomping good old girl who's used to operating in an all-male environment. She knows how to do a shot, read a room, and get things done. sounds very Madison-like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we wish her well. I wish that she was back on this show, but, you know, seems that the ship has sailed. And I know that she was in the Deadwood movie. Either of you guys see that?
Mm-mm. Did that come out already?
Has come out. So. Yeah, it just came out, I think.
Oh, wow. I haven't got a chance to see it.
No. Yeah. And I have some news about a former cast member from the main series. John Bernthal was at E3, and he was at a, I don't remember whose press, whose announcement this was, but it was for Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Breakpoint title, video title, that's, or I should say
game title.
Game title.
Yeah.
That's what I meant to say. Duh. At E3. And he got as much press for that yesterday as he did for the fact that he brought his pit bull. And his pit bull was just sitting there the whole time, just really, you know, well-natured and just very well-behaved. And apparently, I didn't get the name of it, but it was named after a drug dealer or something in Louisiana. Strange, but the dog was certainly a good positive role model for the pit bull breed. So, and of course, I used to own a pit bull, and we still miss him here, Buster. Mm-hmm. He was quite the dog, and
my little one over there.
Yes, they are great dogs. You know, they don't deserve the reputation that they have.
Nope,
they don't.
It's all about the training.
It is.
Yeah,
it's agreed. You know, they are just there to make they want to be, they want to please their masters. So, you know, if you teach them the fight, they're just doing it to try to please you. You know,
yeah.
It's sad.
Yeah, you treat anything bad, it's not going to be a good dog.
Like, definitely.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. Irresistible.
All right, so let's wrap it up here. So, Kyle, why don't you take it on to tell people how they can interact with us?
Yeah, we want to encourage you to follow us on Twitter, and you can find us at Walking Dead GSM. For the feedback, to submit your theories and feedback, most people post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, and you can find that at facebook.com/group/WalkingDeadGSM. We like to encourage you to use our email address as well, and you can do that at walkingdeadgsm@gmail.com. We also have a feedback forum at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, and it is now functioning again, so you can send text or audio there, and you can find our SpeakPipe widget or call 304-837-2278. To support us, the best way you can do that is by subscribing to us in Apple Podcast, or you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple. And while you're there, give us a rating or a review. Yay! Find out all the other ways to support GSM at goldenspiralmedia.com/support.
And it's been a while since we've gotten a review, so we would love one.
And you could also hear us on Spotify.
Right.
Yes.
And Spotify, and also Stitcher, and any podcast client of choice that you use. So, I have been touting, of course, Star Trek Discovery podcast. I have two things to mention this week. You can also hear me on the latest episode of the Earl Grey podcast. I was on that podcast, which is covering Star Trek The Next Generation on the Trek FM network. And on that, I was a guest, and we were covering the many command offers that Commander Riker got over the course of the 7 years. Of course, at the end at Star Trek Nemesis, he finally accepted a position captaining the USS Titan. So we talk about those offers and the times that we see Riker in command of the Enterprise, as well as the USS Hathaway, when he was doing that in a particular episode. That was a good season 2 episode. But anyway, if you're not into Star Trek Discovery, we have that. So there's Next Generation. But I'm also going to say, if you're not into Star Trek Discovery, you're going to want to still listen to the next episode, because it's not out yet, but it's coming. The next episode, we have an exclusive interview. Ruthie was at SoonerCon last weekend, and she was able to interview Nana Visitor. So, Nana Visitor And she, of course, played Colonel Kirinarees on Deep Space Nine. And we were able to get an exclusive interview with her. It's a great interview that Ruthie did. Ruthie's also going to talk about her experiences at SoonerCon, which is, you know, a small regional con in Norman, Oklahoma, that went on last weekend. And but it had a lot of Star Trek content in it, and it was really good. She had a great time. Obviously, was able to interview an icon within Star Trek. So it's going to be great. So that's going to be your next episode. And then after that, we're going to get back to Discovery and cover some big, long voicemails that we have, as well as a panel on season two. So that's all coming up. So we should have an episode hopefully within the next week, maybe by the weekend. Just have to get all that stuff edited, put together. But anyway, that's at StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast.com. I should mention that the Earl Grey podcast, you can find that at Trek.fm. You can find the Earl Grey podcast anywhere where you search for, you know, Apple Podcasts or any podcast client of choice. But StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast.com, part of the Golden Spiral Media Network. So you can find us there at GoldenSpiralMedia.com. And, of course, our Facebook group, which is Facebook.com/group/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. All right. So that's it for me. Mark, what about you?
You could listen to me on in Panels to Pixels on the Next Level Radio Podcast Network. We just did a season one and two review for Jessica Jones. That's up already.
I listened to that the other day. Cool. And totally enjoyed it.
Thank you. And this weekend, Brian and I have a friend, Paik, who's going to be on, and he's going to help me out with the new Godzilla King of the Monsters review for that. And then next week, we'll be continuing on with the new Jessica Jones season three.
Paik, who is loving this season of Fear the Walking Dead, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I agreed with him that I like, you know, a lot of people said that I didn't like it. I did like this episode. So I loved the first one. I just didn't love it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I see things as seasons as a whole. So I'm awaiting the next episode come Friday when it drops.
Yeah. It's all about the dismount. How is it at the end? You know, so especially when you're talking serialized TV like this.
Exactly.
All right. So our next episode, season 5, episode 3, which is titled Humbug's Gulch. And we don't know who's written, directed it, or the description, but you may recognize Humbug's Gulch. That happens to be, was mentioned in season four, that is where John got his trick shot thing. So, you know, how he was a trick shot cowboy, it was there. And I guess that means we're going to see it. We're going to end up there somehow. Okay, so until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And I'm Mark.
And this is Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.